And so the three of us will be discussing all three of these sections.
One of the best things you can do for yourself is understand that you can't do this perfectly. Hello, and welcome to the Seven Sage LSAT podcast. You may be wondering who's on the podcast this season. Well, you're joined by a familiar face and voice in Henry Ewing. Henry, nice to see you.
Always a pleasure.
And then you've got two new faces and voices, my own, Alex, and then Bailey. Bailey, why don't you introduce yourself?
Yeah, nice to see you guys. Super excited to be on the podcast this season. I'm Bailey. I'm one of the tutors, live class instructors here at Seven Sage. I love to teach anything and everything that has to do with the LSAT. And I have nothing else to say. What about you, Alex?
My name's Alex, also a Seven Sage live class instructor. I've taught for some time, and I have a background in mental health as well, and that informs some of the stuff that I like to talk about with the LSAT, but we'll have plenty of time to discuss all that. I'm very excited to be here with y'all. How about you, Henry? You want to reintroduce yourself to the audience?
Well, yeah, I'm Henry Ewing. I am your host of the Seven Sage podcast, the most loved host of the Seven Sage podcast.
But debatable.
I've got fierce competition. I've got fierce competition now. Yes, I brought Alex on because I am unable to do an intro in one take, and Alex just did a perfect job. So hopefully,
and now my job's done.
Exactly. So hopefully we're going to record less. And this will be a nice conversation with me and Bailey.
Awesome.
On today's docket, we're going to be talking about RC and LR and a little bit of LG. As you all know, that the LG section has been taken away. It's going to be taken away at least this August.
Sad.
I don't know. Is that an aw? Did you guys like logic games?
I was just
games?
Hoping was we could pipe thing? In some... Pipe in some sound effects.
Right.
Yeah, I did like
logic
LG.
Games.
Bailey, I know you like LG.
Of course, yeah. I mean, I'm not looking forward to that change in the test. It's going to make my job a lot less interesting, although RC and LR have their ups.
Do you like tutoring logic games?
We were talking about this.
Ooh, that's a good question. I mean, I enjoy it because I think I can, you know, pull it up well and share things, but I do think it gets a lot harder if it's difficult to, you know, share internal thoughts.
We were talking about this before, not to jump the gun, but I hear from a lot of people that they're like, wow, this is such a difficult time to be taking the LSAT because I have to decide whether or not to take LG. And I just wonder, I honestly think in some ways it's a very lucky time to be taking the LSAT, because this is the only time in history that I'm aware of that people have been able to choose, do I want to take it with one full section or without it? So, I don't know. Kind of a cool time to be taking the LSAT.
There's the therapist, Alex, with that positive reframe right there.
Just trying to reframe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's always a bright side.
What would it be like to look at this as an opportunity rather than an obstacle? Very nice. In particular, though, we're going to be talking about a commonly asked question, which is, if you do well untimed, but you perform very unwell, is that a right word? You don't perform as
so well.
You do poorly. You do poorly timed. What do you do in that situation? I think the prescription or the diagnosis and the prescription is different for all three sections.
The doctor's in session. The doctor's in house. Yes. That's the important thing.
Right.
Yes. And so the three of us will be discussing all three of these sections. So why don't we start off with RC? Alex is a bit of an RC aficionado. So Alex, I'm a student. And let's say I was a student having trouble with RC. I was doing well untimed, and then I try to do a timed section and I get eviscerated. Everything seems to go poorly. I grade it minus 12, minus 13. What do you have to say about that person besides to do better?
I mean, the first thing to note is that it's to be expected, right? I think sometimes when people start taking this test, their thought is, wow, I'm doing so well on this untimed. What is wrong with me when when things speed up? Everything falls apart. The first thing to know is just that this is a natural part of the process. This is you frankly do not have enough time to do this test. That is part of the nature of the test. I think in every section, really, you're doing the best you can, but it's not enough time to do a perfect job. And so just accepting that is the first thing. And then I think taking a graduated approach to it is my first piece of advice. I always like to use athletics metaphors. Like if you're training for a marathon, you don't start day one by saying, okay, time to run my first marathon, right? You maybe should start by taking a long walk, you know, gear up from there. So I think taking a graduated approach with timing is the best way to set yourself up for success and not to... to just know that this is a gradual process, that you will grow and you will learn. Bailey, I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree. And what you mean by that, right, is kind of tapering yourself down, you know, giving yourself a lot of time to do it in the first place. And then maybe, you know, you get down to the point where you can do a full RC section in 50 minutes. Great. Next time that you do it, you're going to do another one in 45 minutes, 40 minutes. You have plenty of days to taper down by 5 minutes if that's too much for you, 1 or 2 minutes each time. Like, you can do that over and over and really get there. I totally agree. I tell my students to do that all the time.
You're really setting yourself up for failure in a lot of ways if you don't do that. The diagnostic, obviously, should be done under real test conditions. But after that, just know that you are not, it's not, you should not expect yourself to be in like test form, you know, and you need to work yourself, work your way up there. And you're going to learn more by giving yourself more time to do it and working your way down than expecting yourself to be perfect from the get-go or imposing actual test time conditions on yourself from the jump. So I would suggest starting at double time or even more, and then week by week tapering yourself down is my like big prescription without getting into individualized ideas. But what do you think, Henry?
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think especially having some sort of time restriction, even when you just start studying, makes a lot of sense, even if it's a double time, mostly because, at least on RC, a lot of these are just recognize what is stated questions. You know, the author said this in paragraph one, or you know, this was mentioned as evidence for this experiment. And really, I mean, option one would be to reread the entire passage once you get to those questions. And you would do well on that, right? If you know exactly what you're looking for. These are the five answer choices. One of these is going to be within this passage somewhere. You could just reread the entire passage again. Of course, though, that is not a good way to go about it timed. Ideally, you're reading once and then answering the questions, maybe going back briefly to a particular paragraph if you remember, if the question is referencing that point of the paragraph or that paragraph or a certain point in the passage. So giving yourself that time restriction, even if it is 50 minutes or 40 minutes extra time than you actually would have, begins to force yourself to begin like prioritizing where you're spending your time. You know, I think the same is going to be true on LR and LG too, to some extent, which is just if you had an infinite amount of time, you could probably do well, perfect on this test. You probably could. Maybe not LR, but LG for sure.
I think LR is the one section where there are some questions that you might that people just it's difficult to figure out even if you do have unlimited time. But yeah, RC and LG definitely, you know, it's a whole lot easier if you have unlimited time. I also think that it's important to do untimed work even like there's always room for untimed work. And to me it's like the slider, if we have untimed and timed, like the slider is just gradually dragging over the closer you get to test day. But being able to slow down and really see like what are my sort of deeper flaws, where do I need to focus my efforts, not making the mistake of just thinking everything needs to be done under game time conditions is important. I don't know what's come up for you, Bailey.
And I was going to add that I think, you know, if you keep doing the same thing over and over and you're like, well, I still can't even get to that level of accuracy that I want untimed, that's when we're like, okay, well, don't keep doing the same thing over and over and hope that, you know, something's going to change. We got to try new things. There's plenty of different RC advice out there. We could spend a whole podcast episode talking through random RC advice, and we probably will. A lot of it is just trying new things, see what works. As soon as you figure out what works, you're going to focus on doing that stuff a little bit faster, a little bit better each time. And you never want to be biting off more than you can chew. You just want to choose one strategy to master and get really good at it. Next strategy that you want to add in to make sure that you can accomplish a better question or a different question type. Great. Add that in. You don't, you're just taking one step at a time.
Bouncing back off of this idea, which is to not necessarily try the same thing every single time, but like learn what's working for you and try to shave time off that. Let's say you are doing very well on an untimed section, but very poorly on timed sections. One of the things that you're probably doing is looking at the wrong answer choices, having exact reasons why those answer choices are wrong, and eliminating that right there. However, you're not going to have the time to fully unpack an answer choice on the actual section, especially a wrong one. However, there's also, though, patterns in wrong answer choices. Red flag words or phrases that come up in the passage or that come up in the answer choice that just don't exist anywhere in the passage. Learning to look for those and identify those quickly is a good way to shave down your time. If you're unsure about answer choice A, but it looks kind of good, if you can point out like a single word or two words why B, C, D, E, and E are wrong, you're going to be in much better shape than having to try to fully comprehend B, fully comprehend C, fully comprehend D, fully comprehend E.
Yeah, you got to remind yourself too, there's multiple, always multiple reasons why each of those wrong answer choices are wrong. And I mean, same thing that we've been talking about for RC, the right answers are right there in front of you. So the more that you can remind yourself, four wrong answers, one right answer, and there is proof for it in the passage, you get to that untimed, you can get much closer to that timed the more that you transfer those skills over.
Something that we've that's come up, part of what you want to do is just get comfortable with the fact that you are going to be imperfect. Like, there is not enough time to do this test perfectly. Like, even if you get all of the right answers, even if you happen to get all the right answers, like, you don't have time to put in place your ideal process, which would be like double checking everything, like just knowing beyond the shadow of a doubt that every answer you do, especially on RC, is right. And so you have to get comfortable with the fact that you, your job is not to get the right answer. Your job is to go with the answer that you're most comfortable with, right? And or most confident in, rather. And that's your job. Then the results will be what they are. But that's the way you really increase your speed. And I guess, I don't know, I want to make sure we have sort of like an actionable plan for everyone, because I think we've given a lot of good, you know, sort of philosophical advice. There's no such thing as a one size fits all, but what's the thing that could apply to the most people in terms of RC struggling with timing?
Spending more time on the passage, without a doubt. A lot of people struggle with timing. They try to read faster. Don't try to read faster. Try to do the questions faster. That bounces off of like being willing to look at an answer choice, find a single word, and say, "All right, this is going to be wrong because of this single word." You can only do that though if you understand the passage well. So I always say like 4 minutes is a good like upper ceiling, not like a hard ceiling for the time you can spend on a passage. That'll give you about 4.5 minutes to answer the questions. Should be more than enough if you understand. The passage. I guess also, this is the question I was going to ask earlier, but being comfortable with only being 60% sure about an answer choice.
Yeah.
I think on RC, it's unlike LR and LG, which I'm always 100% confident when I pick an answer choice, even if that answer choice might sometimes be wrong. With RC, I'm all right living in a 65%. 70% comfort level, to be honest. That's probably me being a little bit underconfident, but just knowing that, like, if I'm 60 or 70%, probably closer to 70% sure about something, it's 95% of the time the right answer. And so just being okay with that, because RC is just a little bit more art than math, you could say.
I think that's why people really are scared of it. And it's like are sort of intimidated by it and struggle with it, is because it's like a different threshold. I don't know if that resonates.
Yeah,
with
and
you,
I
Bailey.
Think also, I mean, this all just goes to show, if you're not spending that much time practicing RC, especially in comparison to the other sections, you're just going to feel less comfortable with the section. You have to give it the time of day. You have to do it enough. My best advice is just try an RC passage at the bare minimum every single day. Do something untimed. Get to the point where you can get all those right answers. And then you're going to be that much more adept at noticing those mistakes or those little things that are tougher to pick up on over time.
Alternatively, I have to add, alternatively, because this is my own strategy going into this test, which was to say, if I can get perfect on LR and perfect on LG, which I guess would now be like a perfect on two LR sections, I feel pretty comfortable getting, I felt pretty comfortable eventually getting there. I could miss, you know, up to 9 questions on RC and still get a 170, which would be like a disaster scenario, to be sure.
Right.
However, it's still a pretty good score, despite missing almost, I don't know, a little, but somewhere between a third and a half of the RC questions. So just some food for thought. If you're really struggling with RC, or it seems like you're struggling with RC, man, I'm getting -6 on RC and -4 on LR. Shouldn't I be studying RC? If a student is like that and comes to me, I say, no. Our goal right now is to get your LR down, because the amount of effort it takes and how comfortable you'll feel with yourself, right? You'll feel a lot more confident in yourself with LR, because the section is just naturally one where you just know answer choices are right. You can just feel very, very comfortable. Just to play the devil's advocate, not to say don't study RC. You should study RC. But I think sometimes people think that RC, because they missed the most questions on RC, the natural thing they need to do is focus only on RC then, or devote 100% of their time to it, when really you could be where the points come from doesn't matter.
The same point can be made on the opposite end. I totally agree. Like, we always want to look for low hanging fruit with the score, like just the easiest score increases to come by. That's where we want to focus until we get those, until they get baked in, and then we look elsewhere. So it's like, yeah, if LR is something that you're just having, it's easier for you to progress at, like, keep picking away at that, you know, until you tap out and then look at RC. Alternatively, like, if you're doing really well at a section, like, I know people who, like, get their LG down to, like, -1, -2, -0, or whatever it is, but they really enjoy LG, so they keep doing it. And the same thing applies, right? Like
true.
Don't focus on something that's going to be the hardest score increase to come by. And also, like, don't put all your effort on something where, like, you're doing really well. You know, you want to focus on those, on that sweet spot where it's going to be the easiest score increase to come by. And there's still increased left to find, you know?
And to be fair, so much of this test is just checking in with yourself, being honest with yourself. Like, what do I need to focus on today? If you're just, you know, pushing RC aside because you're scared of it, then yeah, you're going to keep being scared of it. Same goes for any of these other sections.
And if you want someone to hold you accountable, come to my study skills or test anxiety class. Yes. And we can really talk about personal accountability and really get into the nitty-gritty.
Or go to 7sage.com.
that too.
So I guess, like, just sort of bullet points for RC, if you're struggling with timing, allocate more time. Try allocating more time to reading the passage. Just look for strong reasons why you're eliminating answers. Get comfortable going with an answer with 60% confidence as opposed to 95% confidence. And try working your way down timing wise, especially if you're early on, just giving yourself double time to 1.75 to 1.5 to 1.25, so on and so forth. I guess the next step would be one time, regular time. I think that's kind of the actionable points. Yeah. Maybe we should transition to LR.
Why not? General problem when people have LR, they say, I do well untimed, but I do poorly timed. The most general prescription you can give in that scenario is you just need to drill more, right? You just need to drill more timed. Let's say you are doing well untimed. It's probably not a conceptual understanding, really. Mm-hmm. There's probably just an inability to recognize patterns quickly, right? So you just need to get a lot of problems under your belt. But we can always get down into the more specifics, right? I just wanted to give that in the outset.
One thing to add to that real quick is just, yeah, I do see that. I also see people getting drastically different scores untimed and timed, especially in LR. And I'm like, well, what are you doing differently? Like, what are you doing when you actually get to the timed LR section? And they're like, well, I don't have enough time to identify the question type. I'm like, what do you mean you don't have enough time to identify the question type? Like, that's the first step that we got to do. And oh, I don't have enough time to identify the premise and conclusion. We got to choose some things that are just going to be your job no matter what. Carry those over to time practice. Weirdly enough, even though it seems like you're taking more steps, you're doing more things, that's going to shave off your time in the long run.
Yeah. It's really true in every section. The things that we want to skip, I think people tend to think, well, I'm scored on the answer choice I pick. I'm not scored on my reading of the passage, my diagramming of the game, my identification of premise conclusion. So, like, I think the natural thing is I gotta rush through that, right? And it's not a test about rushing. It's a test about, like, allocating your time smartly, you know, and that never involves skipping over those baseline steps that you need to take, you know, premise, conclusion, identification, you know, all the other things.
Yeah, that's very true. There's a lot of things that you might conceptually know how to do, but you are poor at doing. Diagramming is one of them. Conditional translations is something that comes up all the time. You want to be in a place where you look at a sentence and you just automatically know what the sufficient condition is and automatically know what the necessary condition is. It's not good enough for something like not unless, negate sufficient. No, that doesn't work, right? I mean, it does work, but it doesn't work timed. You just need to know. If I say, I don't go to the store unless it's sunny out, you need to know that going to the store is the sufficient condition and sunny out is the necessary condition instantly.
Yeah.
That's something that is just going to kill you untimed. But it's not going to matter untimed. And that's a good place to start, for sure. It's a good place to start. However, you probably need to be drilling your conditionals more, working on really understanding why something like negate sufficient or negate necessary works. Because that's something I just come across all the time, and it bewilders me. It bewilders me because it's actually such a learnable thing, right? It is such a learnable thing, and when the LSAT test writers decide what curve they're doing, they're anticipating that someone's going to mess up a conditional translation. They're not going to know what not unless is. But it's just like free points on the board, right? It's free points on the board. Yeah. So is how I would describe it. So focusing on translations is huge.
Yeah, doing this test is kind of like, it's like trying to build like a car that will break the land speed record, or like build. It's like
the most
you have to,
the most
you have,
the
listen,
most relatable the most
stick
relatable example
with me.
Ever.
It's yeah, like I'm actually doing that right now.
Yeah, listen, I don't know anything about.
I get it. Yeah.
I don't know. Okay, sure, listen, dude. Stick with me. I don't know anything about cars, but I'm saying it's the sort of thing where like every ounce of added weight matters, like, or like backpackers who are allocate, they know exactly how many pounds they have in their backpack, and they're like, how many ounces of water can I carry, how many, like, where you're trying to shape, everything matters, you know. And so the seconds that you allocate, you have to see, where do I need to allocate this, what do I, you know, and where can I shave off some weight, some time, you know. Okay, I mean, listen, do I know anything about cars? No. Do I expect anyone listening to know anything about it? No, just you know, let's get metaphorical here.
Yeah, it's a bunch. It's the culmination of a bunch of little things that ends up giving you a big result, or a much better result. Things like being good at conditional translations, knowing your context indicators, being willing to just completely forget about the context, but understand that that's not where the argument begins. It's going to be very. Yeah. It sounds so simple, but it is actually quite critical to your performance on LR, so the fundamentals are quite important.
You just want those seconds to be used in the most efficient, like most effective way that they can. And for me, honestly, when I took the test, I didn't memorize conditional indicators. I didn't, and I think I probably could have done better if I had. Like, I really needed to think through conditionals. So with every conditional I came across, I'd just be like, I would put it into an if-then statement, or ask, okay, if this is true, then what's true, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I was fast and effective at that, but if I had memorized, it definitely would not have hurt me to memorize all of those conditional lists, right? And as a tutor, I see people who do put the time into memorizing, like, you know, what the group one words do, group, you know, so on and so forth. It's just that much faster. And so, did I understand conditionals well enough? Like, sure, but would I have been faster if I just taken the time to memorize all the words?
Yeah,
undeniably. I don't know, what do you think, Bailey?
Yeah, I agree. I have that same approach. I also just think about, you know, okay, so memorizing conditionals, that's one way to go about this. Like, let's make sure that there's no way that there's ever going to be an if-then type sentence that you don't know what to do with. Let's also make sure that there's just never going to be a conclusion that you can't identify, or that there's no way to figure out, oh, like, well, this, I can't tell if this is the premise or this is the conclusion. This is a sub-conclusion or whatnot. It was just making me think about reading for structure is just as important in LR as it is in the other sections, especially RC. Like, we can parallel right back there.
So many people think they understand how to do it, and they can do it kind of well. To some degree. In other words, they do it accurately, but they just do it accurately slowly, which is just not good enough.
Right.
You have to be quick to do it.
I think that brings us to a point that we wanted to make, which is also like, skip. I know it's not the answer that people want to hear, right? Like, when they ask, how do I get faster? They want to know how to do questions faster. And I'm always like, well, we can do that, right? But you should also be skipping. If you're not getting through every question on LR in the time allotted, then you absolutely should be skipping, because right now you're allocating your time randomly based on what question comes across your path whenever it does, as opposed to skipping the ones that you know are going to take you longer.
Yeah.
And so there's no harm in skipping. You can still get to that question, that parallel flaw question, if you have time to do it. It just means you're not going to spend 3 minutes on it in the middle of the test when there's a, you know, better likelihood that you're going to get it wrong. So really, really, really embrace skipping. I always tell people, like, just because you're skipping now doesn't mean you're going to be skipping when you eventually take the test. Like, your strategy should be changing as your score changes. But you really want to identify the questions that take you the longest and that you're the worst at, which often parallel flaw, parallel methods of reasoning, and skip those, you know?
Did he skip any proms when you guys took your test?
I was way too stubborn about that. And that's why I give that as advice now, which is funny. But like so my studying took so long. It took a year and a half total. And a lot of that was honestly because I was really stubborn. I was stubborn to not ask for help when I needed it. Yeah. I was stubborn to not change my strategies around in a way that would have been advantageous to me. Because I also didn't have that mindset there that was like, well, hey, this skipping thing, that could be an interim strategy. It doesn't have to be your end all be all. And I so wish that I thought about that.
That's the important thing. It's an interim strategy.
Yeah.
I mean, and the answer is like, no, I didn't skip, right. But that was because I got to a place where I was getting through all the questions. And so I didn't have to skip. That's just like, that's the truth. If I wasn't, then I don't know if I actually would have taken my advice because I knew so much less about the LSAT then. But
that makes sense.
But that would be my advice to me, you know?
Yeah. Very good.
And oh, one thing on our notes that I wanted to highlight, peek behind the curtain, we have notes, is the section, like, after you choose an answer, right? Or when you've narrowed it down to two answers, any time you spend there is such a waste of time. I mean, like, that period of time should be choose it and move on. Choose the one you're most confident in and move on, because that is just... that's just such a time sink when you're sitting there deliberating between two questions. You just got to do a coin flip, or you got to go with the one that you're most confident in. Because agreed. I don't know. I think that's where a lot of time is wasted. I don't know if you guys agree.
100%.
And wrong slowly.
It's better to be right fast and wrong fast than it is to be right slowly and wrong slowly. Because being right slowly means you're taking away time from later problems, which is going to result in perhaps even more problems missed down the line.
You don't want to spend 3 minutes on any question. I don't care if you get it right or wrong. Right. That's you've done something bad.
You failed.
No, nothing's bad. Okay, we're not judging.
Yeah,
it's just it wasn't that helpful.
Let's moralize the LSAT a little bit.
No, it wasn't that helpful, and it could be more helpful.
How
in
can
the
we learn from
exactly.
it?
Exactly,
it's a teaching moment. Yeah, teachable moment. Yeah. What are our action points from this? Like bullet, I feel like it's good to sort of sum it up for the people who are like, okay, that's all well and good, but what should I do right here, right now?
Conditional translations first. You need to start getting really good at those. To just knowing argument structure, understanding what the premises are, what the conclusion is. Maybe that's just reviewing indicator words or just working on the general theory of support. Working quickly, like not dilly-dallying between two answer choices, or if you like something enough to like circle it in, but you're not so sure if it's that circled in answer choice or answer choice E, you just got to move. Guess those are the action
items.
Skip.
That's the big one.
Oh, that was scoring, the big one.
If you're just, it doesn't, honestly, I was going to give a score, but it doesn't matter. If you're not getting through all the questions every time, you should be skipping questions. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about that. Because you should be spending the time on the questions you're more likely to get right.
That's true.
Exactly.
Yeah, that is true.
All right, we want to touch on LG for those of...
at least a little bit. So as much as the other two sections, we've got to learn how to counterintuitively spend a little bit more time up front with logic games and then be able to fly through the questions.
The first note that we have is learn to split quickly. I honestly think the big thing for most people, like if this doesn't apply to you, you'll know it, is you need to split more.
Yeah.
Like most people don't split enough.
Yeah.
And you just really need to get good at it. You know, I don't know. Bailey, you're a big
fan. Yeah, by the way, if that's confusing wording, I always have to demystify this in my classes. Splitting just means coming up with all in air quotes. Maybe I'm not filling them out to the T, but good families of the possible scenarios that the board could take on. The more that you can get to having fully exhaustive board splits, which I just measure as to whether or not I can check off each rule as being physically fully written into the board, better off you're going to be.
Yeah.
Seriously, I'm down to spend like 6 minutes setting up a game. I do not even care because I'm going to fly through those questions.
Yeah.
I don't spend more than 30 seconds on any question.
Yep.
If that.
Yeah, I guess to demystify what board means.
Oh, yeah, board.
Good point. If you're fully new, right? So in a logic game, you
demystify
get...
what LG means.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right.
Analytical reasoning.
In any case, right, so in a logic game section, you're going to get four games. These games are going to have different game pieces, and you're either going to be sequencing them or putting them into different groups or some combination of the two, and they're going to give you a set of rules, of course, to organize these game pieces into their respective slots. When we're making a master game board, what we're doing is we're making a general like answer, I don't want to say like an answer key, but a framework for how all these game pieces are going to go in. And then when we split, what we're saying is we are splitting that answer key into two different scenarios.
Nice.
If rule one says X is going into the first slot or the fourth slot, right? You could split on that rule. One game board has X in the one slot and one game board has X in the fourth slot. I think splitting when there's one of two options is usually a pretty good place to begin, right? So you notice one rule just obviously creates two different branches of possibility. Just split right there. I think that's always a good place to get started. Another place to get started when you're trying to split quickly, look for rules that mention the same game piece. Mm-hmm. Game boards or most games that where you do use some amount of splitting, you split the first two game boards out, and then another rule gets triggered, right? And then you use that rule and you split it even again, or you just start filling game pieces out. And so just knowing to be constantly looking for, all right, well, which of these rules mention the same game piece or a similar slot or a similar group is always pretty helpful if you feel like you're just lost on splitting.
Yeah, no, that's the same thing that I'd say. I call the easy splits the tier one splits, and then tier two. So the easy splits are like, there's, you know, block variables here. They can only take up so many spaces on the board. They can only go so many places. One of two options, great. And then the tier two splits are the ones that are triggers, like anything that we can see dominoes or, hey, this happens, that's going to fill out more of the game board. And when people are always asking, like, how do you know when to not split? Well, if I have a potential split, then I'm going to ask myself, what am I getting out of this? If I'm going to end up with a potentially fully filled out game board at the end of my split, awesome, I'm going to run it through. If I'm just going to put one new game piece on the game board and then still be left with a big fat question mark, no way I'm spending my time doing that.
But by and large, people are not doing it enough. Like it's you should get to the point where you're doing it too much before you scale it back. The other thing we wanted to touch on is like for almost every question, you should not test every answer choice. Once you get to the correct answer, I mean, is there an exception to that rule? Once you get to the correct answer, like, you're done. The answers are much more objectively verifiable in the affirmative. Like, once you see the thing that fits what you're looking for, you're done, which is not quite as, it's not as, I mean, it's, that's almost impossible in RC, I would say, to have that sort of confidence. And in LR, you know, you can, but in LG, there's just no reason why you should be going through every answer unless the correct answer is E, you know?
Yeah, there's no comparatively better answer choices logic games. Unlike LR, which, you know, which of these most weakens, all of the logic games questions are going to say, which one of these could be true? Yeah, four of them can, four of them can't, and one of them can't.
It's a binary. Yeah, it's very much binary.
I guess the only thing I would say, and this is a very light caveat, but when you have rule replacement questions, sometimes an answer choice that looks right is very deceptive. Maybe it leaves all of the game boards out that you want out, or all of like the solutions that are not possible out, but then it rules out a solution that was previously possible. Or the flip of that. And so when they're asking, you know, replace this rule, like which of the following rules, like if you replaced it with this other rule that we already gave you, produces the same results. I think those questions can be a little bit deceptive. And you might want to take a look at a couple other ones. But I guess the flip of that would be to say, just come back to it after you're done with the section.
I mean, yeah, it's also like rule replacement. If you're not getting through every question,
that's what I was
going to
say. Don't even be touching those questions unless you are getting literally every other question right. That's my general advice. People are always like, oh, I want to spend a whole session talking about, like, tutoring session. Let's spend a whole hour talking about these rule substitution questions. I'm like, yeah, those are really tough and it is frustrating, but is that really going to be the best use of our time? Like, where else are you missing questions?
It goes back to what we were talking about before. Don't focus on the things that are going to be the hardest things to get better at when there are easier things that are still left to get better at.
I will say they're both deceptively, they're hard and a little bit deceptive, but they're also a lot of them
are doable.
Simple.
Oh my God. They're
very
so
frequently.
Doable.
They are.
You can crack it, but
but the other thing is like, you don't know until you get into it how easy or hard or time consuming it's going to be.
Yeah, that is true. But very frequently, if you notice that they're asking you to replace a rule that you made a big inference on, like 80% of the time, the new rule is just the inference you already made.
I always ask myself, like, what happened when I got this? Because I always do split my game boards. What happened when I got this rule onto my game board? Like, how did that affect the other game pieces? Usually that's going to give you your answer that you're looking for. Mm-hmm. But if you're not quite there, you know, don't be spending your time there.
Yeah. The other thing I'll say, if you're not comfortable doing the thing of if it feels scary to just go with the right answer and not check the remaining answers, what I did when I started the test was like, I made a list on my scratch paper of the answer of the questions that like I needed to go back to because I wasn't sure at all. And then I made a separate list of the ones where it was like, I just didn't check all the answers.
Your time.
And so that would be, I would go back. That would be like, okay, if I have remaining time, I can go back and check the remaining answers. I never did it. Like I never actually did it, but like emotionally I was like, okay, I have the, you know, I know if I have remaining time, I can go back and make sure, verify that there aren't correct answers in the ones that I didn't check. So if it feels a little bit safer to do that, you know, you can always do that. I don't know.
Right. Yeah. One last thing I'll add before we, just cause I feel like talking a little bit more. Yeah, is when you're doing one-star games, especially sequencing games, and you're looking to be better, let's say you're getting those on target time, aim for under target time.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of these one-star sequencing games, and I say this to a lot of people, these can be five-minute games for actually everybody. Right? One-star sequencing games. I wouldn't say that about other game types, right? But one-star sequencing games are really easy. And so if you see, like, on average, people finish this game in about 7 minutes. Well, one, that means 50% of people finish it faster than that, first of all.
Yep.
Right? So you should be aiming for actually lower than that. Let's say, oh, I've got trouble. I don't finish or I get all the final questions wrong. The problem might be up front. You're actually more than capable of making the inferences, doing the hard game. You just didn't have enough time to do it because you spent so much time or, quote unquote, you know, the average amount of time doing question one or game one or game two. So... thing I like to add is just get good at sequencing games.
Yeah. Action items, I think, for LG, split, overdo it until you have to scale it back. Don't test every answer choice. What else? Anything I'm leaving out?
Go get better at the easier games.
Yeah, faster. Get better at easy games. This is very important. Yeah. That's only for the next three tests, I guess, right?
True. Two. We only got April and June,
Wow, that's crazy. April, I guess there's only two more tests. Time flies.
Well, if you want to come to my LSAT 101 class every week, I talk about those test dates every single week. So you can come to LSAT 101. It's free. It's on Wednesdays. There we go.
In any case, though, I think that's all we have in terms of LSAT content.
The main topic. So we want to close with our Mindset Minute. Mm. It's going to be everyone's favorite segment, the Mindset Minute.
It is. Yeah, we can already tell.
We can just feel it.
So what's our mindset minute
it's
about?
It's just like a minute at the end. Do we each want to share a takeaway? Or something that I like to harp on is just the idea of like getting comfortable with imperfection on this test. That it's like truly the just one of the best things you can do for yourself is to like understand that you can't do this perfectly. And that actually expecting yourself to do it perfectly can lead you to do a lot of things that are holding you back. Mm. It can lead you, if even on a subconscious level, you expect to be perfect, which I know a lot of us do, right? It can lead you to like spend too much time on questions to do basically all of the things that we've told you not to do today because you're like, well, I got to get every question right. Like, why should I move on? If I get this wrong, I've failed, right? So I don't know. Do you guys have any thoughts on that?
Much like Icarus in his wax wings. Don't try to fly too close to the sun.
No.
Know your place. Aim for a middle path.
What is the realm of the gods and what is the realm of man, you know?
I totally agree. And yeah, I mean, on that note, too.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, totally I so agree. I agree with the
totally,
realms.
Totally agree. The realm. God, I love realms.
Yeah, no, what we meant by the limiting beliefs thing, though, to connect it back to this untimed versus time practice, you keep telling yourself, well, there's just no way that I can do this stuff timed. Yeah. There's going to be no way that you can do this stuff timed because everything that you tell yourself does end up being a self-fulfilling prophecy. It maybe sounds cheesy. It sounds like that applies to something that's not the LSAT. Trust me, it applies here.
Well, thank you guys so much.
Yeah, this is super fun. Also, we have an email address, and we want your listener questions. So it is podcast@7sage.com. Simple enough. So we want to feature any listener. Well, not any.
Some.
We're going to choose listener questions. We hope to get a lot to choose from, and we'll try and feature them as much as feasible. But yeah, this is super fun. I'm really happy, excited to be here.
Me too.
Yeah.
Any other echoing thoughts? That, I agree.
All right. See you guys next week.
Right on.